If we are wise this beautiful Sunday morning, we will exchange for the privilege of new breath. We will exchange a song and offer unto the world the blessing of our voices. It's my pleasure to say that you and you and you and your voices are very welcome here. Let's sing. A one, two, a one, two, three, four.
Thank you. The music that called us together at General Assembly was led by the service's co-presenter, Dr. Glenn Rideout, Director of Worship and Music at the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Ann Arbor, Michigan. Welcome to this church, and good morning. Your presence here today is a blessing. My name is Mary Johnson, and through streaming video, I'll be sharing with you parts of the Sunday morning service from the Unitarian Universalist Association's General Assembly, held this past June at the Convention Center in Columbus, Ohio. And you've already heard and hopefully sung along with some of the in-gathering music from that service. The General Assembly is the annual meeting of Unitarian Universalists from all over the United States, as well as international guests. Four members of our congregation attended this year's meeting, so if you want to learn more about the activities they participated in, speak with Ruth Maskow, Tom Cochran, Jerry Johnson, or me. The assembly events included panel discussions, workshops, lectures, exhibits, music, business meetings, worship services of many flavors, all with the focus of helping congregations and individuals connect and grow in the spirit of Unitarian Universalism. Now, due to the nature of streaming video, it is difficult to start and stop exactly on the correct second, so there may be a little bit of overlap between segments. Now, if you are visiting with us for the first time, we invite you to fill out one of the guest cards that you'll find in the back of the gray hymnal and put the card in the offering plate, and we'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the activities and programs going on here at the church. And if you've been attending a while and would like a permanent name tag made, please pick up one of these blue cards over on the desk in our fellowship hall, fill it out, and put it in the black box on the desk. And if you've recently put in a request for a name tag, please check over on the desk to see if your name tag has been made. We have a nursery available for infants and young children. Take a left through this door, walk past the foyer, and the nursery is the next door on the left. Our religious education program for children will begin again in the fall, but during our services, we have a spirit chair right here to my right that has a variety of quiet activities. And children attending the service and any adults who are so inclined are invited to go to the chair at any time during the service to take an activity back to their seats. We welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. And I have a few announcements. The service will run over its usual hour length by a few minutes, so don't get too concerned if your watch says 11 o'clock and you're still sitting there. A second announcement, there were 14 people at work day yesterday, and for those of you who didn't have the opportunity to come, we still have a few tasks left. So you're welcome to spend a little time after church to help finish the work. There will not be a formal time for joys and concerns today, but I do have a few I'm going to mention. Paula LaFon graduated from SIUE last night with a master's degree in social work, and we congratulate her. And on a more somber note, in recent weeks, both Dee Evans and Lane Simpson have lost loved ones. And I do have a note here from Lane. I want to extend a heartfelt thanks to all of the UU congregants, my religious family, who suspended their day on Thursday in order to support me and honor my mother's memory. Nobody does it better. Thank you. And a couple more announcements. Next Sunday, August 28th, is the day to meet and greet our new interim minister, Dawn Fortune. Cake will be provided. And she wants to thank everyone who came and helped our home look cleaner, nicer, and more organized yesterday. And in cleaning, we found, among other things, this purple Afghan. If it belongs to somebody, please claim it.
I think it
was
Cleavers. Who? Cleavers.
Okay, well, it's a little late for that now, but we'll see. by now. But anyway, there are also some beautiful family pictures of different families were found during the cleaning. And they are vintage photos, and they're out on the desk. So if any of them look like your relatives, please take them. And I believe that's all the announcements. And as I mentioned, there will not be a formal time for joys and concerns today, but the stones and water are over here, and you're invited to release stones into the bowl following the service if you are moved to do so. We're going to begin our service with opening words and chalice lighting by the Reverend Nancy Ladd and Dr. Glenn Rideout, the co-presenters for the worship service at General Assembly. And Jerry will be lighting our chalice when the time comes. The chalice lighting will be followed by singing hymn number 347 from the gray hymnal. And you'll need to use your hymnals because the words will not be projected on the screen. And when it's time for the hymn, please rise in body or spirit to join your voices with over the 3,000 plus voices at General Assembly. And following the hymn, Reverend Ladd and Dr. Rideout will share a prayer, a meditation, and a poem.
The opportunity has come to us again to weave a singular tapestry of life from countless strands of dazzling difference and a renewed quest for common purpose.
The time has come again for your hand and your hand and my hand to choose each other's company, for our connected embrace to guide us toward deeper understanding of ourselves and each other.
The opportunity has come for your voice and 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 my voice to assemble our voice. And for our voice to awaken melodies of unmitigated hope, to lift up songs that chase after justice.
With a woven will, we can make sacred work out of this moment.
With a gathered spirit, we can build communion even in the most conventional space. So come, whoever you are, let us take up the challenge and possibility of being one with each other.
And let us learn once again what love can do when there truly is a we.
And let the evidence of our decision give strength to each of our lives for all our living. With your body, with your mind, with your voice, rise and let our voice be gathered. Our hymn is Gather the Spirit, Harvest the Power. Truly, our separate fires can kindle one flame. Let's sing. A one, two, three, four. us. Please have a seat if you like. Oh, I mean that.
Only if you wanna.
Yeah. There is more love somewhere. There is more love somewhere. And I'm gonna keep on till I find it. There is more love somewhere. Sing with me.
In the midst of so much hurt in the world, so much that lies heavy on our hearts, today is a day of blessing for the work ahead. So I invite you to join us in the shared blessing of prayerful presence. Spirit of life, source of hope, God beyond our naming, we gather together today, both expansively hopeful and restrictively confined. Hopeful that we might rise to meet a new day for those who seek and who serve the Spirit. Hopeful that each and every one of us might encounter the sacred within, among, and beyond every human soul. And hopeful that such an encounter might work through us to topple the idolatries of our age. And yet we also gather as a people who are not yet free. A people confined, unfree, contained. We are confined, unfree, contained, even on this day of celebration and blessing, because in this culture of division built upon the pain of the people at the margins, even the decent people hold their love too tightly.
Amen. Amen.
Putting it in boxes, prefacing it with qualifications. I will love you if I will see you with. I will bear witness to the truth of my soul alongside you if and only if you agree with me. You look like me, you stand like me, you think like me, you act like me, you sing like me, you wear your gender on your sleeve and produce it upon demand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I will love you and I will meet you in the sanctuary of our hearts if and only if you give me evidence of your good liberal virtues. If and only if you never fail to speak the language of the movement and never weep upon a street corner out of grief for your sheer inadequacy and the vastness of the struggle you cannot even name. We are imprisoned by these ifs and these if-onlys. We are confined by the smallness of our loving, even as our souls remind us that we can only get free if we all get free together. And so today, today, dear Spirit of Life, moving in this place, moving in us today at the end of this week of intersection, let our hopefulness mingle with our conviction. Let our willingness to love beyond our expectations or experience break down our long-held barriers. Let our willingness to be honest about the hardest questions open us to new truths. May there truly be more love. with no labels and no binary and no preface and no qualification and no arithmetic and no limit. Let there be more love to liberate us all, and may we keep on today and every day until we find it and share it inch by precious inch with one another and the world. Larger love, we are invited into an encounter with holiness beyond all of our categories, beyond all of our false binaries of gender, of belief, of title, of form. In this larger love, we encounter that which we cannot claim or name, but can only experience with open hearts and deep, deep humility. An active source of connection we may, on some days, call God.
I offer a poem from my own meditations. I share a bit of what is true in my heart, praying that it will commune with what is true in yours. I call my poem After All. God is no noun, and certainly not an adjective. God is at least a verb, and even that shrinks her. God is not so much a woman as she resides in the improbable hope of brown mothers. God is not so much a man as he is at work in the memory of my grandfather's laugh. God is not trans. God swims in the tears of the one who is seeing her real self at long last in the bathroom mirror. God is not black, neither is he white. God is wading in the contradiction of songs from slave shacks. And I have seen God in the alabaster smiles of children at play. We're getting Michelangelo all wrong. God is not the bearded one surrounded by angels floating over the Sistine. He is not Adam with his muscled back pressing the earth. No. God is the closing inch of space between their reaching fingers. Don't believe for a moment that God is Catholic. For God's sake, he isn't even human. Have you heard the wood thrush when the sun glistens the Huron? Can you see the flowers? How they speak to bees without a word? Still, God is no spring blossom. No wood thrush. God is neither the sun nor the bee. God is what you see in the blossom. God is when you hear the river and suddenly discover how much of it is part of you. To be clear, God is not you. God is somewhere in the 14 billion years which have come to mean that you are. God is, after all, at least a verb. She is neither Pharaoh's rod nor Moses' staff. We must be the ones to cease our slavery. She is not interested in blame, neither does she offer praise. Truth, gratitude are ours to breathe. She will not have your answers. She is too large for answers. She dances too wildly to be fastened to them, and answers are nouns anyway. God is at least a verb. Twirling in the radiant reds of spring blossoms, singing in the rare silences between rapid opinions, attending the tears of dark-skinned deaths, learning in tiny alabaster smiles. God is waiting in the space between fingers that might connect. He is waiting for us to stop naming her. She is waiting for us to see all of him. God is waiting to be.
Each week, we participate in a spiritual practice of giving this to this community a portion of the financial resources we receive. We do this with the hope that this congregation will bring a message of love to the world. This morning's offering will be gratefully received. May it be joyfully given. There were two readings given at the General Assembly worship service. The first is from the book of Proverbs, and the second a poem by Yehuda Amashai, considered as many as Israel's greatest modern poet. From Proverbs, "Get wisdom, get understanding, forget it not. Forsake her not, and she shall preserve thee. Love her, and she shall keep thee. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom, and with all thy getting, get understanding." And the poem by Amishai, it's called "The Place Where We Are Right." From the place where we are right, flowers will never grow in the spring. The place where we are right is hard and trampled like a yard. But doubts and loves dig up a world like a mole, a plow, and a whisper will be heard in the place where the ruined house once stood. The Sunday morning sermon at General Assembly was given by the Reverend Nancy Ladd, who is a senior minister at River Road Unitarian Universalist Church in Bethesda, Maryland. Nancy was the minister at Bull Run UU Church in Manassas, Virginia, when our church partnered with that congregation in the UUA's Leap of Faith program a few years ago. So those of us on the committee have been to the Bull Run Church and have spent a whole weekend with Reverend Ladd. And so it's a joy to see her and hear her when we were at General Assembly. And the title of Nancy's sermon is "In All Thy Getting, Get Understanding."
I have received relatively few honors or noteworthy distinctions in my life thus far. There is the one-time Guinness record-holding world's largest kazoo band, in which I was a decidedly non-featured player. There is the fact that I am standing here before you today, and there is the singular honor I will never forget of having been the very first female altar server at St. Matthew's Catholic Church in Posey County, Indiana. I remember the musty, yeasty, winey smells of the sacristy, the linen alb cool upon my shoulders, the heavy Bible resting in the crook of my elbows, all 70 pounds of me held down to earth with the ballast of that holy book. Thick with gold and bright red ribbons, I remember the liberative story of the liturgy, the smells and the bells and the glory and the monotony of it all woven together. I loved it all. And in time, being properly trained, I was set up on the usual altar server rotation, let's say third Sundays. And I learned that on third Sundays, I would be serving at Mass, not with our regular priest, but with the once a month guest priest who filled in when the regular guy was out of town. We will call him Father Bamey, and he and I, we were essentially the B team at St. Matthew's Catholic Church. We were the backup liturgical actors, the new kid, a girl no less, with pink sparkly glasses and a home perm, and the second string priest, who was altogether crankier and more boring than the rather hip regular guy. What a pair we were on third Sundays. Who can say how the whole thing went in the beginning of that first service, when whichever goddess of church administration set the altar server schedule at St. Matthew's Catholic Church thrust us into contact with one another? I don't remember the beginning of that first Sunday morning service at all, but I remember the end. You see, in the pivotal moment after communion at St. Matthew's, there was this ritual where the priest cleaned the chalice and the paten free from the last holy drops and crumbs of the sacrament. And I was trained that it was my job to pour just a little bit of water from a tiny cut glass pitcher into the chalice, whereupon the priest would swish it around a little bit, drink the water, and wipe the whole thing clean with this little embroidered cloth I would also handily provide, kind of like a waiter at a fancy restaurant. And when we got to that part of the service, I was all set with my little cloth. I was all set with my water. My hands somehow looked more sanctified by holding that little vessel. And I remember walking up to Father Bamey, all full of eagerness, all ready to pour it in and begin the process of these sacred and ancient ablutions. But as my hands rose up to meet him, inexplicably, instead of holding out the cup for me to fill, he raised his hand up too, still holding that chalice and looking me right in the eye. He raised his hands high, high above my head. So I reached higher with that little jug of water. And then he reached higher with the cup. And I went up on my tippy toes with that water. And he raised that cup so high that victory on my part would have required me to go back to the sacristy, locate a trampoline, jump with all my might, and slam dunk that holy water in the chalice, which I'm pretty sure I would have done if I'd have thought of it. From my perspective, surely I was doing it wrong. Surely there was something I had forgotten. Surely if I just kept trying, his hands would come down and my hands would go up and they would meet in the middle like they were supposed to and the holy water would pour. And surely, surely I thought I was doing it wrong. That is the sum total of my memory of that day. I do not actually know how the situation resolved itself. But my mother, out in the pews, so proud, so dear, and so ferociously devoted to me, she watched that whole drama from a different perspective. From her angle, the cup went up, my hands went up, the cup went up, my hands went up, and in the moment when I went up on my tiptoes, so desperately frightened to the bone that I was doing it wrong, she heard and she felt the entire congregation as they gasped as one body. One great intake of collective breath. Because the congregation, and especially my mother, they knew what I did not know. Namely, that Father Bamey reached the sacrament so far above me, stretching the distance between his hands and mine for one reason only. Because I was a girl. And the whole congregation, save me, could surmise he didn't think I belonged in the chancel. So he made his point. And I suppose we all went home. Mom incensed, me just confused. And yet the next time the third Sunday of the month rolled around again, guess where we all were? Right there, in that chancel, doing what you do on Sunday morning. With my mom in the front row, fiercely watching the players and the drama of human interaction met once again on the stage of social change. And we didn't do it because any of us were heroes. We did it because the goddess of the St. Matthew's Catholic Church altar server schedule did not see fit to put us anywhere else. We were right there. And we stayed there. On every third Sunday, from then on, I held out the water and he held out the cup and our hands met and the liturgy happened Sunday after Sunday, month after month, and in and out of years, we were stuck with each other, showing up for the magic long enough that the magic actually happened. One Sunday, I arrived in the sacristy before services. I pulled my alb out of the chancel closet, and I saw there on the door a little tiny newspaper clipping of me from the hometown paper. It was a picture of me in a high school swimming race, gasping for breath under these giant purple goggles. Father Bamey had clipped it, and he'd taped it there in the same minute handwriting he used to label the little drawers of oil and whatnots in the sacristy. Underneath that clipping, in his black pen, he had written one line. "Our Nancy," it said. He even underlined the "our" part, "our Nancy." And after that, whenever I had some modest or nerdy triumph, which only a small town paper reports on, attending the National Convention of Students of Classical Languages, perhaps, because I was cool. He would clip those things. And he would display them with pride on that sacristy door, because by then I belonged not only on the chancel, but in the church. And in some small way, in his new heart. Today I am a preacher woman, in part because of that sense of being known and claimed and even understood by that cranky old man. And today Father Bamey not only serves among a whole slew of female altar servers, he's even gone so far as to speak favorably about the ordination of women in the Catholic Church. We have come a long way, baby. And again, I say that this meeting of hands and this sea change of possibility, it was realized not because we were the heroes of our own story, nor because we earned the grace of our encounter, but because we were stuck with each other. Was not what Father Bamey was looking for on the third Sunday of every month, and he was not what I was looking for in a priest. Neither of us particularly got what we wanted from the goddess who masterminded the altar server schedule. And as it turned out, not getting what we wanted, being stuck with one another so long that understanding might arise in the very friction of our difference, not getting what we wanted was the only thing that made change possible for any of us. The wonderful, deep-spirited, anti-racist organizer Mickey Scott Bay Jones has said that relationship is the sandpaper that wears away our resistance to change. Relationship is the abrasion that agitates enough to make a way forward. Relationship, consistent and ongoing encounter with people and perspectives different than our own, it smooths the way for the sacred even as it rubs us raw. And there is a holy abrasion of the spirit that is born in deep relational encounters across differences. We, as congregations and as a movement, exist to be instruments of that holy abrasion. Those very encounters are our work. Amen. And yet we know that there are many ways to hide from the discomfort inherent in a holy abrasion. There are plenty of opportunities presented each and every day in the life of a congregation and among us to back away from the hard work of continually and repeatedly relating meaningfully to one another and the world. And one of them is to insist at any possible juncture that you get what you want out of the experience of congregational life. Church is a short order menu, and community is a product to be consumed on your terms in your time without making you uncomfortable or demanding a whole lot of you in the first place. It's the truth spoken in love, people. And one of the ways to block the holy abrasion that brings change is to imagine that both congregational life and religious liberalism itself are contests complete with winners and losers. And if we don't get our way, well, we are wanderers, worshipers, and lovers of leaving, are we not? And show up and put on the alb the next third Sunday, who says we have to show up at all, the hero of my little story again. It wasn't me or Father Bamey. It was the liturgy itself. It was the church that asked us to keep showing up even when we honestly rather would not. It was the steady persistence of being stuck together long enough to truly become one another's people, even in spite of ourselves. Now, do not get me wrong. Just because I quietly kept showing up on third Sundays does not mean I am advocating for just taking the formative abrasion of relationship or the wounds of oppression without comment or resistance. For God's sake, do not think I'm coming out against a good fight. We should never, never be complacent or peaceful in the face of the powers, principalities, and supremacy systems that oppress. Oh no. And I will tell you that if Father Bamey and myself would meet under similar circumstances today, it likely wouldn't go down quite like it did back then. Of service in the ministry, I have acquired what community organizers call an edge. And these days, if anyone has the temerity to discount me or undermine me based on their perceptions of my gender, expressions, or age, I am likely to offer up a withering stare and a string of $10 words that make it quite clear I do not bow before the patriarchy. Today, there would be words. I am not one to speak against an honest fight, far from it. I think we need to lean into the real fights of our age. We need to do the work before us, not let another 50 years pass and ask again what in the world we have been doing all that time while the dream goes unrealized. We need to preserve our capacity for the precious gift it is, our capacity to engage. We need friends to keep it real. And keeping it real means admitting what we're really all here for in the first place. In spite of what every congregational satisfaction survey says. We did not come here for the coffee. We did not even come for the great music. We don't even come for our awesome, excellent ministers. You don't. We come because we have a deep, aching need for an encounter with the holy that crosses our borders and expands our hearts. We come to be a part of something so much larger than ourselves. And we cannot do that holy work together unless we are really willing to set aside our own need to win and reach out our hands and seek the deeper understanding that comes with difference. Michelle Alexander has said that nothing will really change in this country unless we are willing to be a coalition united by revolutionary love that preserves the particularity of our individual paths and draws us in to meaningful relationship over the span of all that divides us. This coalition, Alexander says, is destined to fail if we never muster the courage to stand up for what we truly believe and build a multiracial, multi-ethnic, nonviolent army of artists, activists, teachers, healthcare workers, formerly incarcerated people, currently incarcerated people, parents, students, elderly people, academics, hourly workers, and everyone of conscience who is willing to bring an end to the politics of punitiveness and division in our days. Church are called to help create an America that moves beyond the punitiveness and division of our days. And to you, the ones who gave me both my voice and my edge, I dare to say that we cannot enter into this coalition only on terms we choose for ourselves. We must enter into beloved community ready to have the terms changed in ways we ourselves could never have imagined. ready to show up even and especially when we do not get what we thought we wanted. Because neither consumerism nor conflict is the primary impediment to the efficacy of the liberal church in our age. Getting mad enough at merits and apology is not a sin at all in our tradition. That's just the sandpaper of the holy working its way along. No, the greatest impediment to the efficacy of the liberal church today is not the real fights and real failures we get into when we are doing hard work. It is the fake fights we waste our time on while our own people and the people of this world struggle to survive. Of courage these days, which I do. It is because I am personally not at all adequate to the urgent moral demands of our time. That's just being honest. You're not either on your own. But I also weep because I worry literally every day that in this moment of utmost urgency, we, the very ones the world has been waiting for, are wasting our capacity to build change on fake fights that distract us from the work at hand. Over and over again, who's a humanist and who's a theist, as if they are mutually exclusive. Who got their way in what bylaw discussion and what color we should paint the church bathroom. So protected by our busyness that the real fights, the honest conversations, and the transformative sandpaper of real relationship presented to us Sunday after Sunday, week after week, slip right past us. And we remain thoroughly agitated, but fundamentally unchanged. In the meantime, while we are fighting our safe, inwardly focused fights, the shamefully disparate infant mortality rates between black and white communities remains the most durable marker of racial inequality facing our nation today. In the meantime, another of Freddie Gray's killers gets off scot-free. In the meantime, nativism and isolationism seem poised to become the world's new normal. In the meantime, yes, the planet is bleeding and the future of religion in America is uncertain. And in the meantime, everything you and I and all of us care about is at stake. And people we loved who laughed and wept with us one week ago, take their rest in Earth's embrace today. All of this. And yet too often in our congregations, we cannot even meet each other's hands to pour the holy water of sacred work because we are too darn busy deciding whether we even want to be in this place together to start with. I take some cold comfort in the fact that we Unitarian Universalists do not have a corner on the market for such behaviors. For as long as two or more have gathered in the name of the Spirit, those two or more have fought some fake fights. You remember, perhaps, that classic old chestnut of a wedding reading from Corinthians, which says in part, "If I speak in the tongues of mortals or of angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have a faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing." That letter from the Apostle Paul to the early Christian community in Corinth has nothing whatsoever to do with the ushy-gushy romantic sentiment it is so often associated with at weddings. That is a letter from an overextended pastor with occasionally dubious judgment to a congregation whose leaders are in a constant state of fierce and unremitting conflict. In the Corinth congregation were literally shouting their prayers like clanging cymbals over top of one another to try to prove who was better at praying. They were making faith into a contest, and whether he was saintly or not, Paul was having none of it. Nor was the Hebrew leader who first declared in Proverbs that the primary thing in all this is not winning, it is wisdom. And so they said, Therefore get wisdom, and with all thy getting, get understanding. The collective wisdom of the ages reminds us that the stakes are high, and the ultimate prize we must reach out for in community is greater than the imagined divisions and trumped-up arguments that pull us apart. And here is a segue you won't see coming. You know, in WrestleMania, when professional wrestlers have fake fights, sometimes they are actually at risk of getting hurt. And do you know what they do? Before the muscle snaps or the bones break in that fake fight, they tap out. They bang the mat. When the fake fight gets close to having real consequences, they tap out, and I tell you what, I am tapping out right now, and I invite you to join me. I am tapping out of every fake fight in our congregations and in our movement about getting what I want, or what you want, or what we think we want, because in this age, the stakes are too high, and we do not have time for fake fights anymore. And I know, and you know, that the real conversations are waiting. Just beneath the surface of the fake fight is the real abrasion of the holy, the actual encounter, soul to soul, hand to hand, in which change is possible. A fake fight about the bylaws and the annual meeting is most often a carefully concealed real fight about the values that undergird our history coming into relationship with the values that might undergird our future. And if we can get past duking it out over the paint color in the church bathroom, we may encounter a pastoral window into the inner life of one whose voice in the world seems increasingly powerless. And all lives matter. Yes, that one. Chief among the fake fights and cover conversations that distract us from the work at hand, it is not about the slogan. More often than not, it is about our deep and abiding resistance to actually taking on the systemic white supremacy that eats at the heart of us and our culture. So let us have that conversation, the real one, the hard one, that requires us to keep showing up. Let us have that conversation, and let us do it with edge and forgiveness, calling out and calling in, calling forth a new kind of community, both in our congregations and in the world, the real fight, the real conversation about our history, our identity, our relevance, and our resistance. The real conversation beckons, and the world does not need another place for like-minded, liberal-leaning people to hang out together and fight about who's in charge. The world does not need a place where you or I or any single one of us gets what we want. What the world needs is a movement like ours to step more fully into our higher calling, to serve as an instrument for encounter with one another, with the holy, and with the world, so that we might love more fully and speak more truly and serve with greater efficacy in such a time as this. My hands reached up, and in time, the good Father's hands reached down, and the holy water did get poured Sunday after Sunday, month after month, and in and out of years. And my friends, my partners in faith, you must reach out to, starting with each other and expanding beyond each other to a coalition of border crossers led by voices at the margins, a coalition that might yet preach love amid the punitiveness and division of our days. Even when you didn't get what you were hoping for, even when the sandpaper of relationship felt a little too rough, even when you figure out how hard the real fight is actually going to be, even then, you must reach out to. And in this precious and fragile institution that is the church, you might find someone reaching right back. the holy made manifest in the closing space between your outstretched hands.
Thank you all for coming this morning. Hope to see you in coffee hour.